Okay, good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Today we continue the case that we've been working on. So this is part three of case 38, Denko Rocco, the 38th patriarch, and we've been following Tozan and his quest, you know, to find the great matter, his quest for discovering his true self, if you like. So this is what this and every koan in many ways is about. And of course, every koan uses different words. And as I said in my first presentation, you know, words entangle us. And so this is the task that we have, is to untangle ourselves from concepts and words. And I guess another way of saying that is duality. I mean, this is just another word for words. You know, we say, okay, we've got to get into a non-dual state, you know, in order to see it. But really, what is dual is, in many ways, it's the concepts and the language that we use which make it all dual. So it's words really in one way that contribute to that, us looking at everything from a separation point of view. I'd like to continue on page four and just go over a little bit as a way of introduction to what we discussed yesterday. And if you go right to the top of page four, second line at the end, it says the master asked. So this is Tozan. Okay, so the Tozan asked, is there anyone who yearns for the way as you do? Remember, he was asking Aizen. He was still with Aizen at the time. And is there anyone else that I can go to that can teach me? He obviously did not find what he wanted to find with Aizen, you know. And he said, if you leave here and you go to the province of Yo in Horio, you will come to a place with stone caves. There you will find a man of the way named Ungan. And of course, Ungan became Tozan's teacher, and this is what the case is about, when he met Ungan. But he says, if you seriously make your way through the grasses, if you seriously are committed, you know, to dropping your delusions. By the way, you know, I always make this point in the introductory lectures. Commitment is really closely related to concentration. Because when you commit to something, you let go of other. You're just committing to one thing, which is your object of concentration. Or you're committed to your family or to your partner or whatever you are committed to your job. It is, in many ways, letting go of all the others and really concentrated on that which you are committed to. So if you're committed to dropping your delusions, he says, if you're committed, if you seriously make your way through grasses and look earnestly up to the spirit of the way, we talked a little bit about that yesterday, the spirit of the way, don't follow the letter of the way, or the sutras of the way, the spirit of the way. What do the sutras point to? What does everything point to? If you seriously make your way through grasses and look earnestly up to the spirit of the way, you will certainly find the place which is very important to you. And then the master said, what kind of a person is he? So Tozan said, what kind of a person is he, this Ungan? Where are you sending me to? You know, who is this fella? And Izan said, once he asked the old monk, like once he asked me, what should a student do when he wants to seriously serve the master? And we talked about serving yesterday. I just want to make the point again to get us into a frame of mind about service. Service can be, I mentioned yesterday, service, everything serves each other. It's just another way of saying everything is each other. Not just serves each other, it's a service. You know, there's actually no such thing as service. Once we see that, everything is each other. You know. just before leaving the zendo, you know, walking outside, you know, getting into my shoes, you know, the shoes are serving, they're serving, nothing else. And keep in mind, this is about non-sentient beings. This whole koan is about listening to this non-sentient beings. And through the concept of service, we can maybe get a sense of that, the spirit of the way. We can get a sense of that. So just walking into my shoes, you know, just there's nothing but service. You know, walking outside, you know, towards my umbrella. You know, someone gave me that umbrella. You know, someone made that umbrella. You know, here I am, my arm raises up and up goes the umbrella. That is nothing but service, you know. The umbrella serves me. I also serve the umbrella. You know, someone made money. Someone gave it to me because I bought a car. I got the umbrella, but someone actually made a living out of making an umbrella. You know, so this whole thing, this whole everything is each other. Just like I'm nothing but a mandarin, as I keep on saying. It's everything is each other. Then walking, the rain, you know. The wetness, it's everything is of absolute service. Not service as in separately serving me. Service as in everything can only ever serve. this whole thing is nothing but service. You know, nothing but each other. So this might get us a sense of what this really meant here. And he says, you know, what should a student do when he wants to seriously serve the master? And the old monk said, he can do it for the first time when he steadfastly does away with his delusions, meaning that separation of being able to see that, you know. He said, would it be possible not to transgress the master's teaching? He didn't say, would it be possible to transgress the master's teaching? Would it be possible not to transgress the master's teaching? And Isan picked him up on that. And he said, first of all, you cannot say that the old monk is here. First of all, you've got to get to a point where you see that the old monk, if there is an old monk, you haven't entered the spirit of the way. If you see me as me, you haven't entered the spirit of the way. You know, that's a preliminary step, if you like. It's a preliminary step to realize that the master is nothing other than you or I myself. You know, that's a preliminary step. And this is, of course, you know, we're all sitting here, we're all having this wonderful service of this process of Zen. This is nothing other than being of service to that extent that we can hopefully see this. So master, nothing other but my true self. So that's first of all, you cannot say that, you know, like, is there transgression or no transgression? What's transgression? Transgression is nothing other than service. Non-transgression is nothing other than service. Everything is transgression, non-transgression from that point of view. So that's the first thing that needs to be seen. You know. Finally, the master, Tozan, left Isan and went straight to Ungarn. After telling the above story, he immediately asked, who can hear the Dharma preaching of the non-sentient beings? Okay, so now we're getting into the koan. Who can hear the Dharma preaching of the non-sentient beings? Udmon said, it can be heard by the non-sentient beings. It can be heard by my sandals. It can be heard by the umbrella. The master said, do you, master, hear it or not? And Ungarn replied, if I hear the Dharma preaching, you don't hear it. You don't hear my preaching. We are miles apart. The master asked, why don't I hear it? Ungarn raised his hosu. Do you hear it? Do you hear it? That's what he's saying. He raised his, do you hear it? And Tozo said, no, I don't hear it. No, I don't hear it, he says. Ungarn said, you don't even hear my Dharma preaching. How can you hear the Dharma preaching of the non-sentient beings? Tozan said, the Dharma preaching by the non-sentient beings, what scripture contains that? And Ungarn replied, don't you see that the Amida Sutra says, waters, birds, trees, forests, rains, food, good morning, goodbye, car, umbrella, all meditate the Buddha and meditate upon the Dharma. With these words, the master came to realization. So that was his trigger point. With these words, the master came to realization. So that's where we finished off actually yesterday. So it continues. Now, I must say this, the rest is not all of it, but especially towards the end. Kaizen, the master that wrote this Teisho that we're going through, he's trying to explain it. And every time we try and explain it, it gets complicated. So please, it gets complicated. And actually, it then gets also into metaphysics. And we'll see an example of this here. So the idea here, when I go through this, is please look for the spirit of it. You don't have to logically all understand it all. You know, just look for the spirit of what is actually. It's all about trying to hear the non-sentient beings. But he's trying to explain it, and of course, every teacher in many ways wants to explain it. You know, people, I don't get it. You know, it's something that can't be explained. You know, but every teacher wants to explain. And also what happens is that the explaining itself, the process of explaining it, that is the most wonderful thing. The process of explaining it is a process of clarification. You know? So that's when people come to the Dokusan, you know, I always ask, there's a presentation of the fact, there's a presentation, and then what's the insight? And all of a sudden it needs to be explained. What's the insight that we get? Because we need to somehow integrate that as well, you know. Even though you could argue that in many ways it never satisfied, and as we keep going to the next, and we keep going because it just never satisfies. Okay, so now we continue with Kaizen's story, or Teisho. This story, he says, of the Dharma preaching of the non-sentient being started in the assembly of the national teacher and finally bore fruit at Ungarn's place. So you may remember we talked about Ungarn's journey, and it started off with the national teacher, and finally he had realization when he was with Ungarn. So he said in his verse, how marvelous, and so on. So we looked at that verse yesterday. Then, only when you hear the voice with the eyes will you be able to know it. Only when you hear the voice with the eyes, in other words, you've let go of nose and ears, as in ears hearing and eyes seeing. That is the way we're taught it works, you know. But you let go of that. You let go of that. You listen with your eyes. What does that mean? You listen with your eyes. We have to get to a point where we can say, I'm listening with my eyes. You know. The master, so only when you hear the voice with the eyes will you be able to know it. The master told Ungarn, I still have some habits that are not yet exhausted. And again, it's a wonderful humility, even though he's had now, by all accounts, a second realization, he still has doubts. That's what happens. It's a journey of clarification. You know, we keep on clarifying it. He still has doubts, you know. And Ungarn said, what have you done so far? In other words, okay, where are you at? What have you done so far? Where are you at? And the master said, I haven't even done the holy truth. You know, I haven't even done the holy truth. So, what are the holy truth? You know, it could be the Four Noble Truths. I haven't even studied the Four Noble Truths. I haven't, you know, Buddhism is like this huge canon of scripture. And I haven't even started on the, you know, he's had his experience already, but I haven't even started on the Four Noble Truths, he said. And I personally can very much relate to that. When it's only after I became a Zen teacher that I started getting into Buddhism. I did exactly what everyone else is doing here, trying to find the great metta. But when students came to me and said, oh, I'm a Theravada and I'm this, and what about this? And what, I thought, I don't know anything about this. I don't really understand what, you know, I'm come from the Tibetan tradition, and what about the Bhumis? Have you, you know, how do you address the Bhumis? I said, Bhumis? I thought that was some, you know, whatever, you know. So I thought I better learn about Buddhism, you know, a little bit about Buddhism to give context to this thing. And so I went and studied Buddhism. And when I got there, it was like, oh my gosh, oh my God. It's like all these traditions, you know, I knew exactly what they were talking about. When they talked about the four holy truths, you know, or whatever it was, the Noble Eightfold Path, or the four immeasurables, or when they started explaining it, like, all I realized, everything in my practice contained it. There was nothing in Buddhism that is not contained right here in our practice. Everything contained it. But other people that were classmates, you know, they looked at it purely from an intellectual point of view, and it was a hard slog. That's really difficult to look at that and then study that and go, oh, what is this? Do I have to learn this? And oh, what are this and what are this? What? Really a hard slog, you know. So this is in many ways, it was kind of nice to study it and. Because it actually confirmed everything. It confirmed it, you know. It confirmed that what we're doing here is it, you know. Is what the Buddha has seen and also what he's taught. He just used a different language according to the Theravada tradition and a different language according to the Tibetan tradition and different symbols, if you like, and different contexts, you know, that's all it was, you know. So he said, I haven't even studied the holy truths, you know. And Ungan said, have you ever experienced pure joy? What a great thing to say. I haven't even studied, you know, the Four Noble Truths. And he says, have you ever experienced pure joy? You know, it's like, I mean, what, you know, have you ever experienced pure joy? That is like, that cuts through all of that, you know. That all the teaching, pure joy. You know, have you ever experienced pure joy? And the master said, I don't say I haven't experienced it. He says, it's like discovering a bright pearl in a dung heap. Okay, like a bright pearl in a dung heap. So it's like discovering nirvana in samsara, you could say, you know, pure joy. Discovering nirvana in many ways we can explain it. But what's interesting too about pure joy is it's part of the Brahma Viharas, you know. So if you look at the, and again, this is now classical Buddhist teaching, a pure joy, or they call it empathetic joy, is part of the Brahma Viharas. And so Brahma Viharas is a heaven realm that you go to, like literally Brahma. It's the realm of the Brahmas, you know. So this predates Buddhism. This is how old this is. This predates Buddhism. So it's some Vedic, in the Vedic culture, they already had Brahma Viharas. And the Buddha actually changed it. They changed the definition of it, but I won't go into what the definitions were. That's the whole lecture in itself. But it's like what he said is, basically is, for someone that has seen the way, that is a sign. So it's not only a practice, because we can practice we can practice pure joy. There are meditations that the Buddha designed, guided meditations, that the Buddha designed to get into pure joy as well. But also it is a sign of someone that has seen that world. Pure joy cannot but arise, you know. So that's why he's saying, have you ever seen pure joy? You know, if someone hasn't got pure joy, you know, they haven't got it. They cannot have it, you know. Pure joy is just something that arises naturally when we drop away our delusions. You know, Because the delusions, they keep us imprisoned. And when we're imprisoned, we're sad or we're angry or we're deluded, whatever you want to say. But all of a sudden, as we are letting go, pure joy is what just naturally arises. So that is one of the signs, you know. The other one is, the first one is loving kindness. You know, like compassion, loving kindness arises automatically. It just cannot, you cannot manufacture it. You cannot say, okay, I'm going to be compassionate today. It's like, you cannot just say, I'm going to laugh today or now, or I'm going to cry today. You know, it's the same with compassion or with loving kindness. It just arises based on conditions, like anything, based on conditions. We're sowing the seeds, you know, and it's the same with awakening, and we are, it arises based on conditions. So loving kindness is one. Equanimity is another one. Equanimity. No matter what happens, peace. Nothing can disturb that peace. You know, that is another sign, including the most horrific thing. Nothing can disturb that peace. You know, that's another sign of someone that has seen it. Equanimity is another one. Empathetic joy, compassion, and loving kindness. Here for. They're also called the awakened state of mind. These are signs of it. Okay, so the master asks, have you ever experienced pure joy or not? And the master said, I don't say I haven't experienced it. It's like discovering a bright pearl in a dung heap. The master asked, Ungan. So the master asked, so Tozan asked Ungan, what should I do when I want to meet my true self? So even though he had that experience, what shall I do if I want to meet my true self? There is still that, you know, and this is why, you know, when we need an insight to be able to start on koans. But the whole koan process is a process of clarification. And even afterwards, because koans don't stop, as in, you know, I still work on koans. I still go to Tokusan, to the Roshi, and work on koans. It never stops. We keep on going and clarifying the process all the time, because we get tripped up all the time. And that clarification process is so important. First of all, it keeps us steady and humble in a way, you know. And it's just an evolving thing. That's why in Buddhism we say, or in Zen especially, we say the Buddha is still sitting right here. The Buddha is still sitting, clarifying. That's, you got to see who Buddha, what Buddha is. You know. So he said, what should I do when I want to meet my true self? Okay. Ungan said, ask the receptionist. Go and ask the receptionist. This is a funny one. When you look at the footnotes, it says attendant. Okay, eyes, ears, nose, tongue, body, consciousness. So I think this is a translation error. Someone thought, okay, that's, you know, what does that mean? The receptionist. But it means what I get out of this is it means the receptionist. It's a reception. Who is receiving me? Whatever I'm attending to, the attendant, whatever I'm attending to. If I'm sitting against the, if I'm sitting facing the wall, ask the wall. If I am putting on my shoes, ask the shoes. Yeah. Ask, that's what he's saying. What do I do when I want to meet my true self? He said, ask the receptionist. Ask whatever you're attending to. Yeah. If I sit down on my cushion, ask the cushion. If I'm meditating on Mu, ask Mu. You know. This is what he's saying. Ask whatever we are attending to. It's the master right there. Ask whatever we are attending to. And then clever Tozan said, well, I'm asking him right now. He says, I'm asking him right now. You know. Ungan said, what is he telling you? So what is he telling you? I'm asking him right now. What is he telling you? When the master was leaving Ungan, he asked, in 100 years, which means when I'm dead, okay? In 100 years, so when I'm dead, if someone asked me, did you draw a picture of your master or not? What should I respond? And Ungarn was silent for a while. And then he said, justice, justice. I remember once we had a Christmas party with Sun Mountain Zen, and it was at our place. And we, at the time, we said, okay, everyone should bring something, you know. And we used to have a secret Santa, you know. And I said to him, why don't we ask everyone as a secret Santa to bring their true self as a present? Anyway, it was very funny. And so everyone had to go and buy their true self and bring it, and then it became a secret Santa. But this is, you know, when, so he's saying, what shall I, did you draw a picture of your master or not? You know, in 100 years, if someone asked me, did you draw a picture of your master or not? You know, what should I respond? So Ungarn really just did not quite get it. He didn't really see it yet. You know. Ungarn was silent for a while and he said, justice, justice, you know. The master sank in thoughts and he sighed deeply. And he sighed deeply. Ungarn said, if you want to understand a thing, you must be utterly thorough and minute. You know, be attentive. Be very attentive. Don't let it go. The message for me here is don't be satisfied. Don't be satisfied with wherever you're at on the journey. Don't be satisfied. As in be utterly attentive and keep letting go and stay in that realm of not knowing. Stay in that realm of not knowing. You know, that's staying in that realm of not knowing is probably the way to express that the best. You know, stay in that realm of not knowing. The master, meaning Tozen, still had some doubts. He still had some doubts. Okay. Later, when he was crossing the river, he saw his own shadow and thereupon was greatly enlightened as to his prior statement. He made a verse, and this is an absolute classic verse. Okay, it's a really nice verse. And he wrote this, it's truly abominable. It's truly abominable to seek after others. Master, true self, Mu, Buddha, I gotta get this, what's this? It is truly abominable to seek after others, infinitely away from myself. I, all alone, go now by myself. I, all alone, go now by myself. Everywhere I see him, he now is precisely I. He now is precisely I. I now am not he. I now am not he. Grasping it in this way, one can directly match with suchness or instantaneousness. Instantaneousness is another word for suchness. Instantaneousness. You know, everything at once. Every when. What's nice about this one is this, I am not he. That's a very important part. I am not he. We quite often say, I am Buddha, I am Mu. You know, I am not he. There is still an I there that wants it, that controls it. I am this, I am that, I am, you know. That needs to completely disappear. I am not he. I alone go now by myself. Everywhere I see him. He now is precisely I. He now is precisely I. Or it is precisely I. Or she is precisely I. Whatever pronoun you want to use, doesn't matter. You know. And this verse is, I just finished the last sentence. Tozan's learning of Zen for life has been terminated, etc. And he quickly abandoned all doubt. This is exactly the whole story. So this was finally when he had his great enlightenment. After many, many, many steps, he had his Satori, if you like, his great enlightenment. I'd like to read another verse by Dogen, which mentions the same sentiment. And this comes from the Shobo Genzo. You know, this quote from Dogen is also on the Zanbo Zen website, first thing that you see. And it encapsulates really in a verse our journey, if you like. And it goes like this: to study the Buddha way, to study the Buddha way is to study the self. Isn't that lovely already? To study the Buddha way is to study the self. Okay. Then he goes on. To study the self, to study the self is to forget the self, to drop the self. To study the self, minutely study the self, find out what the self is. Who am I? You know, this question, who am I? To study the self, psychologists, they study the self, psychiatrists study it. But to study the self, you know, really study the self, beyond therapy or feel good self. You know, I feel bad, I want to feel good. To study the self, really study the self. And we need to be ready to do this, of course. You know, that a lot of people say to study the self and go maybe into therapy or into psychology. They think they get an insight into the self. But it's like to study the Buddha way is to study the self. That's the Buddha way, not the psychology way. To study the self is to forget the self, let go of the self. To forget the self, goes on. To forget the self is to be actualized by the myriad things, non-sentient beings. To forget the self is to be actualized. To forget the self is to be actualized by the myriad things. The non-sentient beings confirm us. If we drop away, you know, if we drop away, everything confirms it. You know, this is exactly what he says. I am not he. You know, everywhere I see him, he is now precisely he. It wall is now precisely I. You know, it's that same sentiment. So to forget the self is to be actualized by the myriad things. Then the next line goes, your body and mind, as well as the body and mind of others, drop away. Your body and mind, as well as the mind and bodies of others, drop away. Wall drops away. Chair drops away. Sue drops away. Miles drops away. Everything drops away. No trace of enlightenment remains, and this no trace continues endlessly. Endlessly. This no trace continues endlessly. That was Dogen's. Of course, Dogen is Soto, brought Soto to Japan, and here we've got Tozan, of course, who started the Soto lineage. So these are two masters that you could see by their verse the depth of, you know, of their insight, just by connecting with that verse. Okay, goes on. Now it gets a little bit more philosophical. Well, let's see what we can make out of this. Concerning the story about the non-sentient beings preaching the Dharma, the practitioner Fun of Yan Yo marked the beginning by asking the national teacher Iku, I humbly heard you speak of the non-sentient beings preaching the Dharma, but I haven't been able to understand it yet. I beseech you, Master, please instruct me. The Master, the national teacher, said, if you ask about the non-sentient beings preaching the Dharma, you must first understand those non-sentient beings. So it's what I said in the first Teisho. You must first understand what is chair, what is dog. If you want to understand what moo is, you've got to understand what is dog. You know, what is chair, what is cushion, what is pat, what is paper. You've got to understand that. Then you will be able to hear my Dharma preaching. You just ought to hear and grasp the non-sentient beings preaching the Dharma. Fun said, please explain right now expediently for the sake of the sentient beings as me myself. Then he goes on, what is the karmic reality of non-sentient being? What the karmic reality of non-sentient being is? So he's asking, what is the karmic reality of non-sentient being? And the national teacher said, right now, amid the functioning of all things, rain, noise, dog barking, traffic, amid the functioning of all things, both streams of holy and of ordinary do not arise or perish in the least. So here what that means is, we talk about it sometimes as the two truths. Buddhism is called the two truths. Or we quite often talk about it, the phenomenal world and the absolute world. So you've got the phenomenal world and the essential world. And the Roshi has this famous equation. It's a fraction. So anyway, I won't go too much into that. But basically, the phenomenal world and the essential world, you know, as a fraction equals one. It's one. It's one and the same. Two sides of one coin, or two sides of one hand. So on one side we've got phenomena, dualism, and the other side we've got non-dualism. You know, in one way we have a chair, and the other side is no chair. But first we've got to see this non-dualism. We've got to be able to see that non-chair. That's the first thing. We've got to be able to see that there is nothing at all there. You know, it's one existence. But then we come back to chair. And then on the other side, we've got non-chair. So we're falling back straight into dualism. That's what equals one. It's one. One and the same. We've got two sides, if you like, of one hand. It's two sides of one hand. Two sides of one hand. So he's saying both streams of holy and ordinary, meaning the absolute, the holy, the absolute and the ordinary, do not arise and perish in the least. That's just a concept. That's just a concept in order to understand it. But they don't arise at all, you know. This means that the subtle consciousness belongs neither to being or non-being, yet it fervently sees and realizes it. It simply hears that which possesses no ordinary consciousness or attachment. You can read this many, many times as I have done, and it gets even better than this. You can read it as many times, and you might make something out of it. But the idea, as I said in the beginning, is you've got to get the spirit of this. You know, what is really meant here? You know, and when I looked at this, what I get out of this is, especially when he talks about the subtle consciousness, it's like when I see a chair, I can see both that there is no chair and that there is a chair. And there is a chair, there's no chair. But day to day, I don't go along and say, oh, there's a chair, there's no chair, there's a chair, there's Scott, there's no Scott, there's rain, there's no rain. Of course we don't go around, we don't live our life like that. But there's a subtle consciousness that knows. There's something very, very subtle that informs everything. Like, you can't undo that. Once we've had that experience, we just can't undo it, you know. Of course, it continuously needs clarification, and as we clarify it, you know, we see it clearer and clearer and clearer. But it's like chair, but actually, it's the whole universe right there. The whole of existence, is nothing other but this chair. It cannot be otherwise. At the same time, it's a chair. And this is the way I read, this is what he's pointing to. Another way that I say that is another way that you can say that, I should say, is that there is no chair in a context of a chair. So the context is the form. You know, no chair is the emptiness. There's the form of chair. Of course it's not a chair. Chair is just a label. You know, is it, what is it, you know? You know, but you need to, everyone needs to investigate what is chair. You really need to minutely investigate this. What is chair, you know? So if you know, if I say in the context of chair, it's like there is no chair in the my context right now, of course it's a chair. I know exactly what it's for. I can sit down on it and I can look at it and say, oh, that's comfortable. Or I wouldn't have that chair if I was sitting on a chair. I would have a different chair. These are all contexts, you know? So that's another way of looking at it. So it goes on. This is why the six patriots said the six sense roots opposed, the six sense roots being opposed to the external objects are not the subtle consciousness. So what does that mean? The six sense roots, seeing is one, you know, hearing is another one. So the six senses, the roots is seeing, hearing, smelling, okay. The external object is what I see. So if I have my object, or my sense, which I'm taught that, these are my senses, I've got eyes, and now I see my object. My object is the chair, so I see my object, okay. That is not the subtle consciousness. Don't trust that. Don't trust that. Because that's what we do. And we are stuck in that realm of, well, that's, of course that's a chair. Because that's what I can see. What else is there? We're stuck. Don't trust your, that's that subtle consciousness he is referring to. Don't trust it. You know, it's the same as feelings. We have feelings and we believe them. Or we have thoughts and we believe them. Don't trust your feelings and your thoughts. In many cases, that's Mara. You know, when I say it's Mara, it's all based on conditions. What I watched on television 3 weeks ago might come up as a thought right now. It's got nothing to do with who I am or what. It's just a condition that just arises. And that thought might trigger a feeling. And that feeling might be gotten or a perception, you know. And all of a sudden I'm sad and I wonder why I'm sad. But this is just the process of how we operate. That's all it is. It's just a process. You know, it's like it rains and you get wet. It's the same. It's just so simple, you know. But don't take it as it being you or it being, oh my God, I'm so sad. No, it's just sad. It's all it is, just sad. It's got nothing to do with you, you know. Blame television or whatever you want to blame it, you can blame. And of course, we can't see that. It is just so, there's just so much information that we gather. We can't see through all of that. If we want to decipher it and try and find it, it's impossible. Leave that to the scientists and the people that study that sort of thing or whatever, you know. But it's actually impossible. And we shouldn't be interested in that, quite frankly. That's not what is meant by subtle consciousness, you know. So I don't know what he's referring to, but I have a feeling, I mean, the spirit of it, I think, is that's what I get out of it when I read this. So the six sense roots, being eyes opposed to the external objects, are not the subtle consciousness. This is the way how Nanyo spoke about the Dharma preaching of the non-sentient beings. He namely said, amidst the functioning of all things, both streams of the holy and ordinary do not arise in the least. So amid the great functioning of, say, chair is a functioning. That's a function. The chair is a functional object, okay? But the holy and ordinary does not arise. That's a concept. If I get stuck into that, then I'm in my mental formations again. That's just a concept. Okay, let that go. This means that the subtle consciousness belongs neither to being nor non-being. Yet it fervently sees and realizes. It fervently, there is something there that once you've had the experience, that makes you see it and realize it more and more and more. However, people ordinarily think that the non-sentient beings must be such things as fences, walls, tiles, pebbles, land, and pillars. We even label them as non-sentient. They must be non-sentient. And they are fences, walls, tiles, pebbles, all separate. But that is not what the national teacher meant here. The views concerning ordinary and holy are not yet separated from each other. And ordinary consciousness and attachment concerning delusion and awakening have not yet arisen. Let alone is it the calculation of ordinary thoughts and discriminations, nor is it the aspect of movements of birth and death, coming and going. There's a subtle consciousness, and this subtle consciousness, in fact, fervently sees and realizes. It is far from ordinary consciousness or attachment. Therefore, Tozan also said, grasping it in this way, what can directly match with suchness. So I won't go through all of that. He's trying to explain it, but I'm hoping you get the spirit of it. If one knows that wherever one goes alone by oneself. I mean, if one knows that wherever one goes alone by oneself. If I'm going to the Zendo, I don't go to the Zendo. My sandals are going to the Zendo. They're not even going to the Zendo. You know, it's going is going to the going. It's like the labels fall apart. If there's only I alone, there's only aloneness, you know, nothing there at all. Everything is everything. Everything is each other. Everything serves whatever label we want to put into it. There is no such thing as going to the Zendo. It all happens simultaneously. Whatever's happening is happening simultaneously at any given time. That's why everything is everything. Yeah. That's why the chair is the whole thing. You know, cannot be any other way. There is the subtle consciousness, and the subtle consciousness, in fact, fervently sees and realizes. That's what it is. If one knows that whenever one goes alone, by oneself, not me, myself, everything myself, myself, by oneself, shoes, umbrella, my heart. I think that I am here, but my heart is me. Everything, my heart keeps pumping. What is actually, everything is walking. There's only just walking, you know. Everything is walking, call it walking, maybe running, maybe, is there even walking? Everything, if one knows that wherever one goes alone by oneself, then there is not a time in which anything doesn't match. That is impossible for anything not to match with suchness. All suchness. Therefore, an ancient said, there has never been a wisdom outside of suchness, a wisdom that must be verified for the sake of suchness. You know, this is our task. We must verify whether we can actually say that. This is one of the points that the Roshi makes quite often. Can you say that? When you go to the Dokusan room and you say, you know, this is me or whatever you say, have you verified that? Can you actually say that? You know, we must verify that. Can you say that? Suchness outside of the wisdom, suchness that had to be practiced for the sake of the wisdom. This comes back to the ordinary. We have to practice it for the sake of the wisdom. You know, we need to get to that point. It is the way it is, regardless of whether you see it or not. But in order to see it, we need to practice. We need to get to that point. Suchness is unmovable. It is utmost clear and ever knowing. And by the way, this practicing and this pathway and the struggle to get there is suchness itself, you know. So don't think it's separate. Everything we do is suchness itself, you know. We just don't necessarily see it that way. Once it clicks, you realize that the destination is nothing other than right now. There is no destination. Therefore, it is said, the clear knowing of complete clarity does not depend upon thoughts of the mind. The clear knowing of complete clarity does not depend upon thoughts of the mind. The thoughts of the mind, the function of the mind and of thoughts is to differentiate. And thank God we've got this. It's not the enemy. We need to differentiate in order to move forward, in order to know what time is it for lunch. You need to know what time it is for lunch. We need to be able to know what time I need to leave to go for lunch, or what time I've got left, or we need to differentiate in order to function. But that does not depend on it. So this clear knowing, or complete clarity, does not depend on our thoughts. Fervent seeing and realization is therefore not attachment. Fervent seeing. We are, of course, attached to the phenomenal things, but it is not a fervent seeing, like always seeing it, always seeing, is not attachment. Isan said, I won't explain it to you with my mouth, given to me upon birth by my parents. Then he goes on. It is also said, if living beings hear it, they are no longer called living beings. So if living beings hear it, like if I make a concept of what is a living being, or a sentient being, or a non-sentient being. But if a living being hears, if they hear it, they're no longer living beings, because there's no such thing as living beings. That's why they can't hear it. If all of a sudden you can say, living beings are hearing it, or enlightened people can hear it, or holy people can hear it, you're trapped. You're trapped in that, what do you mean enlightened people? What do you mean holy people? What do you mean living being? I alone, there's no such thing. You know. Absolutely no such thing. So then they can't hear it. Because Tozan received the instructive teachings of various masters, Aizen and Nansen and Ungan, and grasped the true non-sentient beings, he could spread the spirit of our Soto school far and wide as the patriarch of our lineage. So again, you know, coming back to that service, when you look at the Buddha, for instance, as an example, or other, whether it is Mohammed, the prophet, or whether it is Jesus, it doesn't matter. People that have really clearly seen that is so powerful. The degree to which we can see that, you know, is so powerful. In modern times, the Dalai Lama, Thich Nhat Hanh, Indira Gandhi even, the saints in Catholicism, there's so many people that have seen it. But when, you know, the degree to which we see it is so powerful, it has a huge effect on humanity, you know. So, but of course, what happens as human beings, we create an ideology around that and we create something out of that. And before you know it, look at what he caused, Muhammad, with the Muslim world. Look at what Jesus caused with the Crusades, or even Buddhism. There's, you know, people fight. It doesn't matter who it is, you know. We people make something out of it, and we can destroy it. So it's just one of those things, you know. That's what we do. If living beings hear, if they are no longer the so-called living beings, it is said, if living beings hear it, they are no longer the so-called living beings. Because Tozan received the instructive teachings of various masters and grasped the true non-sentient beings, he could spread the spirit of the Soto school. If so, my fellow monks, scrutinize the matter thoroughly and minutely, and realize fervently the subtle consciousness. Realize the subtle consciousness. This is precisely non-sentient being. It is called non-sentient being because there is no running around after sounds and colors or objects, and no binding bondage of ordinary consciousness. There's no bondage when you see it. No right, no wrong. The way is not difficult. It simply dislikes preferences, or it simply dislikes choosing. That choosing is what gets us in the way. I can't get my own. I want this, and I can't get this, and I get upset, or all of this. Sounds of no binding bondage of ordinary consciousness. Indeed, the above mentioned principle must be captured minutely and thoroughly. Therefore, when you hear someone speaking about non-sentient beings, do not understand carelessly that it means fences and walls. When you are simply not deluded and not attached to emotions and thoughts, and your seeing and hearing are not scattered, the subtle consciousness is clear and undarkened. It's clear and undarkened. Totally lucid and utterly distinct. Even if you try to get it, it is impossible to get because it has no phenomenal form. It is not being at all. Even if you try to throw it away, it never leaves you because it has always come with you since distant kalpas, meaning forever. Forever, I mean, not since you're born, forever, but you've got to understand who you are in order to be able to say that. It is not non-being. Furthermore, it is not the movement of the mind, such as recognition, knowing or pondering. Much less is it close with the four elements or five aggregates. Therefore, when she said, there is a wisdom apart from ordinary thinking and discrimination. So there's a wisdom apart from ordinary thinking and discrimination. And there is a body that is not the four elements and five aggregates. He refers to the subtle consciousness, preaching constantly and fervently. It is preaching constantly and fervently, all the time, all the time. This means that it is manifested at all times and is precisely called preaching. Now, to see that it is preaching all the time, you've got to understand what preaching is. If you think that preaching is talking about something, no, you're caught. Non-sentient beings are nothing other than preaching. Preaching is nothing other than non-sentient beings. The wall is nothing other than preaching. You've got to understand preaching. Preaching is nothing other than non-sentient beings. It's nothing other than it. That's why it's preaching all the time. It's preaching all the time. It lets you raise your eyebrows and blink your eyes. It lets you go. It lets you stay, sit, lie down. No. You are in an impasse or in deep trouble. You die here and get born there. You eat when hungry, sleep when tired. All these are preaching. Everything is preaching. Of course, our mental formation has a completely different way of looking at preaching. So this is what he's referring. This is that subtle consciousness that we can get that sees that. And when you see that, how can you get upset anymore? It's impossible to get upset by anything. It's all, you know, everything confirms me, myself, you, yourself. You know, everything confirms it. Speech, action, moving and stopping, various manners of life, these are all preaching. It is not simply a preaching of words and non-words. There is something that comes magnificently, something that is so clear that it can never be concealed. In all things it is manifest, even in the croaking of toads and the noises of earthworms. Therefore, it is preaching constantly and fervently, preaching without interruption. This is also sometimes we call it preaching without interruption. It's a seamless activity. Seamless activity. It is like we interrupt the activity with, okay, this is that, this is this, this is. But when you really minutely look into it, there is actually no gap between any activity. There is no gap whatsoever. It's all preaching. No matter what we do, it's just one seamless act. It falls into each other. We just categorize it so separately. One seamless activity, you know. If you see it thoroughly and minutely, you will someday be like our supreme patriarch, Dozan. You will be able to become a model for others. How could I now explain this principle? So now he writes the verse. This is Kaizen's verse. And he wrote, the inexpressible subtle consciousness has nothing to do with mental attachments. in daily life, it makes him preach fervently, or it makes it preach fervently, you know, in daily life. So the inexpressible, subtle consciousness has nothing to do with mental attachments or formations. In daily life, it preaches, it makes him, or it preaches fervently. In daily life, it preaches fervently.